Welcome to another episode of the Student Loan Planner Podcast. I am your girl, Lauren Williams, and I'm joined by one of my student loan planning besties, Megan McGuire. And today we are bringing you some quick hits related to student loans because we know if there's one saying that's true right now is that the only thing that is constant is change. And there are changes left, right, upside down, and inside out as it relates to student loans. I know you guys are probably tuning in a lot more frequently because student loan payments are getting ready to start. So Megan and I wanted to bring you some information to kind of let you know what should be top of mind for you as we are navigating these changes. So Megan, welcome to the show. How's it going today?
Hello. Good. I look forward to these quick hitter topics. I figured coming out with some factual information on the most common questions we're getting right now could be helpful. And then we'll continue to trickle these updates over the coming weeks as we lead up to payments restarting. Do you want to kick it off with one of our first topics?
Something that has been a pretty big deal is this consolidation application. Consolidation is all the rave right now. It is one of those things that has been like, ooh, don't do this. It's super scary. It could wipe away all your payment history. And in the past, that absolutely was true. But now more than ever, people are consolidating left and right for various reasons. But there's been a lot of changes for the actual consolidation application that's happened online. So you want to talk through some of those, Megan?
They made some really significant changes to the consolidation application a couple weekends ago. They shut down the whole website. You couldn't access anything for a bit. And it's because they were updating this consolidation application and the income-driven application. In summary, the process is a lot more simple, which is awesome. There are less questions overall, and it's a much cleaner format from what we can visually see. And a couple features. So one really big pain point with the consolidation application in the past was your spouse had to sign off on the application, which really drug out the timeline because then they had to sign in with their studentaid.gov account. But what if they didn't have loans? Well, then they had to make one. Then it was just an account that had nothing in it. So then that was the way that they could sign off on the application. So it really like made that process really clunky. So they completely took that part out. Your spouse no longer has to sign the application at all, from what we can tell. You just have to be able to put in your spouse's information. So their name, their social security number, and it finds them on that tax return to verify that you're married. And the IRS data retrieval tool seems to be a lot cleaner, a lot easier, and it links through a lot better too, from what we could tell as well. And another benefit to that IRS data retrieval tool, it pulls through the adjusted gross income, so it can give you a real-time estimate on what that payment is going to be on the income-driven plan that you're choosing. So that's something that was not the case before, where you had to do the calculation yourself, pretty much. You had to find your adjusted gross income, plug it in, and it would spit out the number. Now it seems like it pulls it through for you, which is pretty nice. At least that's what we could tell. So
yeah, there's some really cool things coming down the pipeline. I know it's not often that we want to give the Department of Education a round of applause, but it looks like these changes to the consolidation application are for the better. And especially that part as it relates to, you know, your spouse's income and spouse's information. People were really freaked out. Like, you said that my student loans were my student loans, so why do I even have to put in their information? And, you know, a lot of people keep their finances
separate.
Why do they
have to sign?
Exactly. It causes a lot of cause for concern for a lot of people.
And confusion. Yeah. Oh, and another thing I'll mention before I forget is if you're self-certifying your income. So let's say your income is lower than what that last tax return says. You can opt to give them alternative documentation, and there's a place for you to upload that documentation in the application, which is awesome. You used to have to print out the form and mail that into your loan servicer, which again was a time suck, and they're starting to simplify and reduce timing delays is what it seems like their goal was for this revamp. But all good things. It is still a beta, so I'm sure they're still working out some of the kinks if you've had any issues with it. But overall, it does seem to be a lot easier, which is good.
Yes, yes, yes. And I think since we're talking about consolidation, we can kind of transition to your area of expertise. You are our Parent Plus loan girl. When we have questions, when there's something big is changing there, one of the things that we've been experiencing is a few little hiccups as it relates to the double consolidation. I know for me, one of the things that's happened is when they go to do the consolidation application, we used to ask them to hover over the area to see what their loan code was, but you can't see it like that anymore. So that's one of the changes. But FYI, the loan code is you if you're a Parent Plus borrower. But there's also, like I said, related to the actual consolidation, some problems that we've been having with people getting on an income-driven plan. You want to break that down for us?
Ooh, yeah. So Parent Plus loans, just in a nutshell, if they're consolidated just altogether once, they only have access to income contingent repayment. That's how the law was written. If you do this double consolidation process, it's consolidating a couple of your loans completely separately. So what you end with is two separate consolidations. And then you take those two separate consolidations and consolidate them together. And that essentially works around that law that says that if your consolidation paid off Parent Plus loans, it only has access to ICR. Because in that example, that last consolidation only consolidated two direct consolidation loans. So it's kind of a trick in the system. And it works. And it is a legal loophole. They've called it out because they are closing it. They're closing the ability to do this in July of 2025. So if you are a Parent Plus loan borrower, you still have Parent Plus loans outstanding, and you're struggling to, you know, you're running the calculations on what ICR looks like, and it's not very helpful from a payment perspective, like it's still too expensive, then this double consolidation might be something to consider. The process itself is a doozy. I am not going to sugarcoat it. It is not a fun process. Again, it is a loophole in the student loan system. So I'm telling folks, we're going to have to jump through some hoops to do this. And man, they have really made it harder more recently with all of these changes. All of these changes that are meant to make things faster and easier for folks that are regularly going through a normal process. But for Parent Plus borrowers, it's made things clunkier. One of the big issues we're having is usually on the last consolidation, we're doing an online consolidation application and applying for the income-driven plan. Well, on that last step, it is recognizing that the consolidation loans that you have had Parent Plus loans in the past. So it's not allowing SAVE or the new lower income-driven plans to be eligible for selection. And that panics people because they think, oh no, I must have messed up somewhere. And that's not necessarily the case. I think it's just the coding of the application. So our instruction so far is if you get to that point, that's what you're seeing when you're trying to do that last consolidation, simply just apply for the standard plan, which is one of the fixed repayment plans that spreads the payments out over a period of time. That could be a good placeholder until you can turn around and try to do the online income-driven application after the consolidation is done. Now, I have seen that not work either. So it's hit or miss. It seems to work for some folks, seems to not work for others. So we're learning as we go right now. But if you're still having trouble seeing the option to choose the SAVE plan, even if you've done the consolidation first, got on the fixed plan, now you're trying to apply for the income-driven plan, you're going to have to call the loan servicer and advocate for yourself. Again, this is a loophole. So you have to really articulate that they need to look at the sequence of consolidations, not the fact that you had Parent Plus loans. That's true, but they need to look at the sequence of consolidations. And if you're not getting anywhere with the first representative you talk to, that's okay. Ask to speak to a manager, ask to speak to their manager. Keep trying to work your way up the chain to tell them, hey, I need somebody to look at my loan file a little closer because my last consolidation did not include Parent Plus loans. So I am eligible for these lower income-driven plans that I'm seeking to get on. And that has seemed to work. There's only been one instance so far that I've seen where they've called multiple times and just haven't been able to get through to somebody that they're eligible. So we've submitted a complaint through the FSA complaint system. We'll see where that goes. So we're learning right now what the most efficient way to get through this is going to be, but that is currently the situation with Parent Plus loans. Now, it is still legal. We are still legally able to get access to these cheaper plans if the consolidations were done correctly. So it's just a matter of kind of fighting for it, if that makes sense. So through a consultation process, we can help you the best we can with getting through as fast as we can.
The two important points there is, like you said, that they have the window closing in 2025. So the fact that they put language around the window closing means that the window is currently open. And right. then to that point is like, yeah, like they understand that this thing and they're a little bit confused about it. And that's why they're probably closing the window. So there's someone on the other end that's not super educated about a double consolidation loophole and is just reading from a screen. But that's where advocating for yourself is so important. So think of some other bill. You get your credit card bill in the mail and, you know, you didn't spend $50 at McDonald's. Like, you could let it go, but you don't even go to McDonald's. So you're like, no, this is absolutely not a charge that I made. Every single other charge is mine. Like, advocating on your behalf. You know, my light bill is really high this month. They can just tell you like, well, we calculated like this. You're like, no. I didn't use more electricity. It's not hotter. It's not the middle of summer. You sometimes have to call and you have to push a little bit. Come back out, read my meter again. It's the same situation when you advocate for yourself as it relates to these student loans. Like, yeah, you're not a student loan expert, but this is your borrowing situation. This is your financial situation that it's going to be affected by this. And if you have the right information, there is no reason to just say like, oh, okay, well, maybe they're right. I'll just give up. And it is the most frustrating thing. You're like, I paid for this consultation. You told me to do this, Lauren, and now it's not working. I can completely understand why you'd be frustrated. But like I said, there's parts of it that we at Student Loan Planner don't have control of. We know what the rules are. And like I said, that's where you might have to spend an extra hour or two on the phone, but it could be well worth it to get access to these plans.
Yeah. Again, it's a loophole. So it's not supposed to exist. It's not supposed to be easy. And the huge reward of it, though, is the cheaper payment and that for the life of the loan going forward. So it's still worth the effort. You just have to put in the effort on your end. We can only do so much.
Amen to that. Exactly. Speaking of cheaper payments, you know, there's the SAVE plan that's been all the rave. And we have a whole episode about that, I'm sure. When we came out, we talked in depth about it. So we won't spend a lot of time. Like I said, this is a quick hitter episode. But one of the things we did want to mention is that if you have been on the revised pay as you earn plan, REPAYE, when you log into your servicer, you should now see SAVE as your plan. They have automatically transferred you over to that plan. If you have no idea what we're talking about, you're new to the Student Loan Planner podcast, never fear. Welcome. We will get you caught up. Like I said, go back and listen to some of those episodes. But Megan, do you want to give like a quick rundown of the key differences between Repay and SAVE?
Yeah, the really quick hitter differences. They're both 10% of discretionary income, but SAVE has a higher deduction off of your income. Thus, your payment would be a little bit lower on SAVE than it would be on pay. If you have graduate loans, just factually, you have graduate loans, then the SAVE repayment timeline for loan forgiveness is going to be 25 years. If you only have undergraduate loans, it's 20 years. Pay is 20 years regardless. So there is a conversation right now trying to figure out, you know, for some folks, should you be pursuing pay because it has the 20-year timeline, or are the cheaper payments on SAVE worth it for 25 years of payments? So you will have to compare if you're unsure there. And then the last really big positive about this SAVE plan is the interest subsidy. It has a 100% interest subsidy. So what does that even mean? That means if your payment is too low to cover the interest that's charged each month, let's say your interest charge is $500 a month, but your payment is only $100 a month, that would mean normally that $400 a month, that difference between the interest charge and your payment, would be added to your balance in the accrued interest bucket. And so your balance would be growing. The SAVE plan waives that $400 completely. So your balance stays stagnant and you're essentially making interest-only payments if you're in that environment. The pay plan doesn't have the same subsidies. It does have a 50% subsidy for the first 3 years on certain loans, but it does not have the life of the repayment subsidy. So that's something we're also comparing for folks. Like, does pay make more sense without the subsidies, but the shorter timeline, or is SAVE a lot more beneficial? So it's not a clean cut answer for everybody, but if you're unsure, go ahead and apply for pay, or if you're looking at your options and it seems really close, you can apply for pay to just lock it in. That way you have access to it, because after July 2024, you cannot apply as a new person into pay. And then later on, you can change to SAVE. If you think you've made a mistake that SAVE actually was going to be better for you, you can switch to SAVE later. But we can't switch to pay if we've made the wrong choice after July 2024.
And that is a key piece of the puzzle. Getting on the pay-as-you-earn plan, if you're unsure, if you, you know, trying to book a consultation with us and you don't see anything in the near future, getting on pay is a safe bet because we can always switch you to save. Switching from save to pay is not going to be an option as of July 2024. And they're also prohibiting borrowers from switching to IBR after the equivalent of having made 60 payments. So that is another piece of the puzzle is like there are a few people. I think there's very few at this point where IBR is going to still be a relevant plan with all the changes that have happened. But you do need to be thinking about that. What should people be thinking about related to the IBR change, Megan?
IBR, income-based repayment, or new IBR, those two are their other options. New IBR, we never really talked about because it was almost exactly the same as the pay plan for a long time. But now that pay is disappearing, new IBR might become relevant for those who want a 20-year timeline and who are a new borrower. So couldn't have borrowed before October of 2014, I think it is. So if you're a new borrower, then you will have access to the new IBR plan, which is a 20-year timeline. You could choose between that and save. But as you were mentioning, if you start out on save, let's say because you want the interest subsidy for a while, makes sense. It keeps the balance lower. It, you know, allows you to keep the balance as low as possible. So if we have to pay taxes on that in the future, it's a lower balance. Now, they've kind of prevented you from staying on, you know, the save plan until the 19th year and then switching to IBR, the new IBR plan for the 20-year timeline. They're not allowing folks to do that. They have a 5-year window where if you're on save for 5 years or the equivalent of 60 months, then you're locked into that plan. You can't switch to a different income-driven plan in the future. You can take advantage of it strategically for 4 years, 4.5 years, but if you don't remember to switch, then you're going to be trapped. So that could be a little bit of a tricky situation. You'd have to really be on it to know if that's a good plan for you.
So there's a lot of little nuances that people needed to take into consideration. I mean, even to that point, you're talking about like staying on for a period of time and then maybe trying to switch. One place that I think this might still be relevant is with dentists or doctors. Frequently, we see them go into residencies and know pretty sure they're going to go into private practice. But as we all know, life is out there lifing. So sometimes things change. You don't want to refinance your loans prematurely, thinking like, oh, yeah, I'm going to make lots of money. I'm going to be able to pay this back and I'm going to be able to do these things. So what do you think about like doctors or dentists or someone who's pretty sure that they're going to be able to pay their loans off over the long term using something like save in the short term to be able to take advantage of that interest subsidy you were talking about?
It can be very strategic. I call it like a foot in the door approach where you're not sure if you want to go and refinance yet. You definitely can't afford the higher payments, but you know, save is looking attractive because of the interest subsidy. So I tell folks, if you're not sure about the forgiveness path and you don't feel super comfortable going and refinancing right now, you can use save as a placeholder, make those required minimum payments. You'll have that interest subsidy. If you think you're going to want to pay extra towards the loans, I'd probably still suggest like sock that aside to savings. And then if you do decide ultimately, yeah, I'm going to go pay these loans off or I'm going to go refinance, then you have that savings that you can dump down on the balance and work it down from there after you've already made that decision. But if your plan changes to the forgiveness route, if that starts looking more attractive to you, then you didn't waste any money by throwing extra money towards the loans and you've been on the income-driven plan accumulating credit. So that's why I call it a foot in the door approach because you're kind of literally, or not literally, but you know, figuratively, keeping your foot in the door for both the passive path or the aggressive path, leaving that decision open for the future until you know what your career path and income situation is going to look like later on.
Absolutely. Clarity is one of the things that we're all looking for, but we seldom have because, like you said, we don't know what life is going to be bringing us. So last little things related to all these crazy changes that we're seeing. You know, one of the big things is capitalization of interest. People are like, oh my God, I don't want to consolidate. Capitalization of interest is the worst thing ever. We know the answer is not when you're going for an IDR plan, but there's some other things to be thinking about related to this capitalization. So Megan, what have you seen lately related to the changes?
Capitalization with switching repayment plans has been eliminated, except for if you switch from income-based repayment to a new income-driven plan. So if you're switching from like ICR to save or pay to save or save to pay, those are not going to be an interest capitalization trigger. And that just means that the accrued interest gets added to your principal balance, but switching from IBR will be. Why is that the case? Well, that's how they wrote it in the law originally, and it's not been changed. So, and then consolidation also is a capitalization trigger regardless. So is that an issue? Well, the short answer is no. If you're switching to a different income-driven plan, it's probably because it's going to save you money per month and because it's a better plan for you long-term to pursue income-driven forgiveness. And if we're pursuing income-driven forgiveness, our goal is to pay as little as possible. So the lower the payment we have and the better interest subsidy we have, which it could be related to save, is more important than the interest capitalization. So in almost every scenario, it could make sense to still switch plans or to consolidate. Some folks don't need to consolidate, though. So that's the other thing. If you just have all direct loans, they all entered repayment at the same time, you don't need to consolidate. But if you're someone who has lots of different payment count histories because you went to school at different times and you borrowed loans at different times, you have those FFEL loans, then you could be ripe for consolidation and it makes sense to maybe entertain that route, even if capitalization comes into play.
I think that it makes a lot of sense to think about what your particular situation is and not get wrapped up in the details of like, oh my goodness, this one thing that has a negative impact is going to be like the game changer. In general, it's not. Look at your whole financial picture. We always make that recommendation as we're talking through your student loan scenario. We're asking you about like, what does your mortgage look like? What does your car look like? You know, car payments. Do you have kids? Do you have someone in the household that you're dependent on? All of those things do play a role in your ability to be able to pay your student loans. And so we're looking at your full financial picture in the same way. Like I said, the capitalization is just one piece of the puzzle. You do not want to be making a decision just based on this one thing, making decisions that are kind of happening in a, what's the word, like a silo? What's the...
or like a horse blinders on?
Yes. You don't want to be making decisions with blinders on. You want to be considering everything. With that said, you also brought up, Megan, like you said, all these different payment counts that people have and the reason that people are doing a lot of consolidations right now. It's to get these payment counts updated. IDR cancellation is happening. We've been seeing it happening. It is awesome. Like I said, don't get so caught up in the capitalization that you miss out on cancellation, which is a much better C word right now. And even if you're not eligible for cancellation right now, there is a tracker that is coming down the pipeline that is going to get your payments counted. So you want the highest number of payments. You definitely want to be considering what is the appropriate thing for me to do based on my particular situation, because we know student loans are not one size fits all. Let's wrap it up, Megan. I know we ran through some quick things here. We always want to be giving people whatever the latest advice is. Anything you want to say to wrap up our quick hitters episode?
Last thing I'll mention, everybody just go double check that your contact information and your personal details are updated with studentaid.gov. So do that. We'll be ready for payments to kick back in. Stay tuned to our future newsletters and also our future podcast episodes, and we'll keep you informed.
And you always know where to find us at studentloanplanner.com. And if you need to email us, help@studentloanplanner.com. This has been a Quick Hitters episode. We will be coming to you with more information ASAP. Really, next week.
Have a great day, y'all.